My name is Cheryl Miller. I'm a wellness strategist, life coach, and mayor of CherylMillerville.com. And now I'm living in Overbrook, and the mayor and I are mayors together. I'm the virtual mayor. He's the real mayor. I was invited to speak 15 years ago to Unity, and this is the last, you know, it's been 15 years. I don't know what that says about my last presentation, but Sherry.
That's why I asked you, because it was so good 15 years ago.
Sherry Schultz asked me to come and talk about one of the 12 powers, the power of elimination. The color was brown, and you can imagine there were some humor opportunities in that one. So, you know, I normally give wellness talks on managing stress and healthy diet and exercise and healthy aging and all those kind of things. So when somebody invites me to give a spiritual talk, I'm kind of out of my element. So even though I have a very spiritual life, I don't, you know, usually talk about it with a lot of people. But so I asked my spiritual entrepreneurs group, I said, you know me really well. What do you think I should talk about? And so Pam Grout said, Cheryl, you're a genius at following your inner guidance. I'm like, really? I am? Yeah. She thought I was really courageous to sell my home, that beautiful little suite home in North Lawrence, and move to Overbrook, a town of 1,000 people with two diner restaurants and, you know, a couple of businesses and, you know, 1,000 people. So she thought I was very courageous to make that move. So sometimes when you're taking the journey, you don't know how courageous it looks to other people. I'm just acting, you know, I'm tuning in and acting. I'm kind of like a savant when it comes to fixing up old houses and rehabbing old places. I, you know, really narrowly focused, really narrowly incredibly skilled at that one thing. And some other things like relationships, not so much. So I'll talk about the journey. She encouraged me to tell the story. You know, I didn't want to have it be all about me, but it's hard to tell your story without that. So anyway, I'm going to tell a little bit about that story, and hopefully some of it will speak to you. I want to begin with a quote from Michael Beckwith, one of our favorites. If you are not consciously directing your life, you will lose your footing and circumstances will decide for you. Well, I'm an Aries. I'm not going to let that happen. So I bet that's not going to happen for a lot of you, too. And, you know, I can't even take credit for that drive and focus that I have because I was born with it. All I'm doing is tapping into it and, you know, having the courage, I guess, to follow it. So we can all do that. So there's several elements, I think, about following your inner guidance. One of them, the most important one, is to know thyself. What do you value? What's important to you? Is this thing that's coming down the pike, is this me or is this not me? One example I have of that is I bought this beautiful kind of a raincoat thing. It's like a Cruella de Vil coat. You've probably seen me wear it. It's got a big hood. It's got a really lovely brocade on one side, and when you reverse it, it's very plain on the other side. And I wasn't quite up to speed with, I knew I loved it, but I wasn't quite up to speed with having the courage to wear it. I bought it about 15 years ago. And it's still lovely. That's the thing about it. I brought it. It's in the car. But anyway, I asked a couple of friends of mine that I trust, and they're very confident people, and I said, how, you know, should I wear it on the plain side or on the glitzy side? And they said, oh, on the plain side. Okay. So I put it on, you know, and wore it like that for several days until I realized, hey, I bought it because of the other side. So I just took a little courage, turned it inside out, put it on, and I tell you, I get compliments to this day about that coat because it's so unusual, and people in elevators stop me, people on the street stop me. So that's a tiny example of following your inner guidance, and it's also an example of sometimes not having the courage to do it because you're just not quite there on your journey yet. A journey is to get you there, right? So you're not there yet, so you're wondering about it and worried about it. So I ask for advice. I love to ask people for advice. And then one friend of mine says, Cheryl, you ask for advice, but then you never take it. And It's really true because the advice comforts me. You know, oh, you know, I could do this, I could do that. It kind of shows me what the options are and helps me think about it in a broader way. And then I get quiet, and then I determine what it is that really is me and what's not me. And like I said, it's easier in some areas of my life than it is in others. You know, inner guidance for relationships is not as clear for me as it is, you know, some other things. So in Unity, one thing we do is we do vision maps and treasure maps and all of that, because we tear out pictures from magazines that kind of speak to us. We may not know, oh, why does that word speak to me? Why does that picture speak to me? And it helps us kind of get a vision for, oh, this is me, and hadn't thought about that before. So, you know, that's one way of doing it. Another way is, just thinking about, I teach some classes called the Harmonious Home, and in order to have harmony in your home, you have to have a vision for it. You may not know you have a vision, but I teach a two-word vision statement, and I help people come up with the vision that they want to experience in their home. Mine is beauty and efficiency. So that helps me in that if I'm going shopping for something for my home and I see a chair, oh, it's beautiful, but is it going to be efficient? Is cat hair going to stick to it? You know, is it going to be in the way when I'm trying to walk through a room? Is it going to be too big? So it's got to match both of those things, beauty and efficiency. So those words, believe it or not, help me quite a bit just in my day-to-day life. So it's nice to know what your values are, what your vision is. You don't have to have the full vision, but, you know, partial vision really helps. And in my business, you know, what do I want to do in my business? Well, I want to help people live healthy, happy lives in this lifetime, because we're always putting off health and well-being and, you know, until we get everything else done. And so it's kind of like the way I like to live my life, too. I want to be healthy and happy more than anything, so I will make sure that that happens one way or another. And I help other people make sure that that happens in their lives as well. So know what your guiding vision is. And pay attention to the discontent in your life. I think sometimes the discontent takes me there on my journey quicker than the places that I'm really happy about. And in my case, I lived in Lawrence since 1981, loved it, loved my house. I'd been in that same house 22 years. I'd spiffed it all up, cleaned all the cabinets. It was perfect. There was nothing to do. So I was watching, you know, all of the 11-season reruns of Little House on the Prairie. I read the whole series of books. I watched all the Doc Martin, and I'm not a TV watcher, but, you know, you got to do something. So I found that I was kind of done with it. You know, I'd been there and I'd done that, and I'd worked for the state for 22 years, and I'd commuted back and forth. So I never felt like I quite had a community in Topeka, never quite had a community in Lawrence, because I was spending half of my days each place, and when you get home, you're kind of tired. I lived alone. So I felt like I had to make appointments to see my friends. And I'm a social person. I didn't really want to live with anybody necessarily, but I wanted to be with people a lot. So I thought, you know, that's an area of discontent. I tried to talk my friends into living somehow communally with me. I said, hey, let's get a schoolhouse, big schoolhouse, and each of us gets a classroom. I'm all excited. You get these big classroom windows. I could just see it, sun streaming in, and then the gymnasium could be, a place to have retreats, and we could have, you know, play basketball, whatever. I mean, it'd be great. Can't you just see it? And then we could have an organic orchard, we could have an organic garden. I thought about all my different friends that I wanted to invite to do that, and I'll be darned if none of them would do it. None of them. None of them. I'm like, come on. Well, how about an old motel? We each get our own little small room. It's a smaller vision. No, nobody wanted to do it. I couldn't believe it because I thought it was so cool. And then I thought, how about hobbit houses out in the country? We each have, I knew a guy that built those sod kind of houses, and I thought, we talked about it, and I thought we could have all these little houses leading to a communal, you know, eating space. I really wanted a communal eating space. I like to cook. I'm tired of cooking and eating alone. So anyway, once again, couldn't get anybody to bite. And I'd come back and I'd revisit and I'd say, remember that idea I had? And still not doing it. So, you know, you back burner some stuff. You pay attention to your inklings. That's another thing. You really got to pay attention to external signs and internal signs of what's speaking to me. And those were things that were really speaking to me, but it wasn't happening. So sometimes your inner guidance is just, it's kind of a pre-paving. It's kind of getting, you know, back burnered there, but it's still simmering on the burner somewhere. You just don't know quite how it's going to happen. And I don't like to make things happen because that doesn't feel quite right. I like to let it happen. And so I have confidence that, you know, it's back there somewhere and it'll happen one way or another. So how do you find out who you are and what you want? Well, you spend a lot of time in the quiet. I don't call it in the silence because some people get the idea then that they have to meditate. And I think meditation is great. I think it's wonderful, but there are lots of ways to meditate in addition to the kind that we did today. You can meditate by puttering around in your kitchen or in your yard or in your garage. Puttering is a great way to get in the flow of, you know, what your inner guidance wants to tell you. Cooking, polishing your coins in your coin collection, you know, whatever it is that your hobby is, you get in the flow. Have you ever noticed when you're doing your hobby, you're just in the flow? Your right brain is really excelling and your left brain is not necessary because you're doing your thing. That's a time that your inner guidance speaks to you. That's the time that it speaks to me. So in order for that to happen, we have to kind of turn stuff off, don't we? I live in a basically silent universe. I don't have TV or radio or anything like that on. And sometimes when I'm even cooking, I think, oh, I could turn on some music. Nah, you know, I choose to have it be really quiet. And I take quiet walks with my dogs. The quieter, the better. I just like a lot of quiet. And I think that's one reason that I get so much clarity. I don't work at it, and I don't even really sit and meditate for 20 minutes. I've meant to. You know, I'm meaning to, I'm still meaning to, and that's still probably on the horizon for me, but I've not ever gotten that practice going. But I do all those other things. So even if you don't meditate in the traditional way, you can still get very quiet and, you know, and let the, you know, let it be. I love that song, you know, it's so perfect. Let it be. It comes up. We don't have to struggle and work and strive until we start the journey. Once you start the journey, there's this second force that comes along that says, wait a minute, you think you want this, but do you really? And the first force is when you go, oh, this is what I want, I'm going to go there. And then you start going there, and go there as quickly as you can because you really want to get on the path and do it as quickly as you can. But then there's the second force that says, you know, it's resistance, either from the external world or from the internal world. You know, scare yourself to death as you're on your journey, or you get scared by something that happens out there. And instead of, you know, thinking that's a bad thing, because we're all about positive energy, right? Right? We should only accept positive energy. Well, I think that these other things come up because they give us a chance to recommit and to say, get thee behind me. I'm going this way. You know, talk to the hand, the face isn't listening. Whatever. We are getting another chance or several chances to recommit. And boy, what's more powerful than recommitting to our inner guidance? It's very powerful. It's even more powerful than committing in the first place, committing in the second place, and then committing again and committing again. Sometimes people do that in a marriage. They have marriage ceremonies where they can commit again and again, because you can imagine, well, I can't imagine, my longest relationship so far has been 3 years, and I'm working on a year with Alwyn, so I'm creeping up on that. But yeah, I know, that's another part of the journey. So a lot of times people think, well, is this my inner guidance, or is this my ego? That's a big question. And I don't have the answer, but the answer that I use for myself is that the ego is about protecting and defending you. There's a lot of fear when we tap into the ego. The ego is saying, oh, don't go there. Or if you go there, dominate, compete, you know, oh, get it all for yourself, right? That's the ego. The ego is like all about, so there's a lot of fear acting out of fear. So if you feel really fearful and like, gosh, I'm going to lose out if I don't do this, and you know, that's probably your ego, because your inner guidance is a lot softer. Your inner guidance says, hey, sweetie, I think you'd really like this. Take a step. Go there. There's, you know, kind of a humming thing. There's some beautiful stuff there. Take a bite. You know. So, you know, it still can get kind of scary sometimes, and we can expect that it's always going to be sweetness and light. But one journey usually leads us on to another journey, right? So my journey to Overbrook, which was the journey that I expected, also led me to another journey of an intimate relationship with Elwin that I wasn't expecting after 13 years of being single to suddenly be in a committed big relationship with somebody who's totally different from me, you know, provided another opportunity for another second force. And you know, so it's the journey is a fascinating thing, and you're laughing because you've probably been there and done that. So it's real important, as I said, to take note of the inklings that you have. It just may be a little inkling. You know, you put it in the back of your head. Like, the inkling for me was to try to do more of a communal living thing. I wanted that, but I didn't have any idea how I could get that to happen. Another silly kind of a thing, pay attention to your dreams, your books that you read, movies that you see, television programs, conversations you have, because all of those are about life. All of those provide rich opportunities too. And I had a dream one time that I was trying to board a plane from the tarmac, and you know, the stairs that go up to the plane, I had 40 suitcases down here. 40 suitcases, and to make matters worse, I'm trying to board the plane, but I have to leap 4 or 5 feet to get onto the plane, and I'm trying to think, how am I going to get 40 suitcases on that plane leaping? And of course, I was seriously trying to think about how I could do that, because that's kind of the way I am. How can I get this done? Well, anyway, when I woke up, I thought, wow, that message was pretty clear. If I want to go on my journey, I'm going to have to let go of a heck of a lot of excess baggage. So we can listen to our dreams. You know, we most of us have wonderful dreams that kind of guide us. But another example is Northern Exposure. I don't know if any of you remember that show, but it was in the 90s. It was a quirky comedy in a small Alaskan town. These people kept coming into each other's lives throughout the day. They would just, you know, and I thought, I love that. Because like I said, I don't want to just make an appointment with my friends. I want to see people all over the place. I want to see them coming and going. I want to see them at the post office and the grocery store and shoveling their, you know, their driveway. I want to see them. I want to see them everywhere. I want to run into them naturally. You know, the word now is organic. I want it to be organic. So I tucked that away. I mean, I don't even know I'm tucking it away, right? But there's something about that I really liked. And then Under the Tuscan Sun. That was hot. That was a good movie. Anyway, what I liked about that movie was the community that formed around her renovation of her life and of this home. And she had this big table and all these people sitting at the table, and she was cooking and stuff going on. And I just thought, oh, I love that. And for somebody who lives alone, that's a very different vision, isn't it? But once again, I'm not going to Italy. I can't figure out how that's going to happen, so I kind of put it back in the back of my mind. And I've always, when I was a kid, I loved Western, you know, cowboys and Indians, and I loved the prairie and bunkhouses. I did some research on bunkhouses. I got a bunch of images of bunkhouses, and I pasted them in a, you know, my treasure map. I wasn't sure what I was going to do about that, but I liked that idea. I bought the domain name peaceontheprairie.org because I had this idea that I might do a retreat center on the prairie. I didn't know where any of this was adding up because nothing was happening. I mean, it wasn't, nothing concrete was happening, but over 3 decades, you know, hopefully it won't take you that long, but anyway, but like I said, once you get a sense for something, move on it. And what happened for me to move on it is Vi called me, Vi Hamilton called me and said, hey, a friend of ours is moving from Overbrook. Never heard of Overbrook. Okay. He's moving, and they also have an organic orchard. Let's go see it all. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I love all of that. I love looking inside of people's houses and taking, you know. Ooh, what else? And so anyway, we drove over there, and we're looking around and walking around, and I wasn't really conscious that I was thinking about buying that house because just 5 minutes ago, I was just living in my beautiful house watching reruns of Little House on the Prairie. So I wasn't planning it. So, but, you know, all of that stuff back there in the next week, all it took was a week. All that stuff kind of sifted into my brain, and I thought, ooh, 1,500 square feet of, you know, open garage space. I got three garages. I could turn two of them into a teaching space. Wow, what would that look like? They a beautiful shed that was a really cool shed. Doesn't sound so great, but anyway, fix it up, and it could be a VIP little cottage for somebody to stay for the weekend, and wow, I could clear off a lot of this brush. A lot of people called it the hidden house because it was so encroached upon by overgrowth, and so, you know, little by little, I started getting visions of what this space might be, and I kind of call it the flashlight effect because I don't get a huge... It's all lined out and it's on a blueprint and I know exactly what I'm doing. That does not happen to me. I get a flashlight and the flashlight shows me about 10, 15 feet. And that's all I need, because if I saw the whole thing, when I look back on the journey I've taken, I could almost get sick. I could, I just, you know, when I'm telling people about what all the work I did on the house, I don't even want to go there because it was so much work. But, you know, if you just take a few steps and you do what the... Plus, you can also focus. It was like I had blinders on. I would focus on just the 15 feet I was working on. I wouldn't look ahead at all these other things because I couldn't get that done. I can get this part done. So we don't have to see the whole thing and we don't have to do the whole thing. We can do the part that that we can see. So... Anyway, I was also attracted to this place because it started tapping into these, like I said, these inklings that I had. 1,000 people in the town, kind of northern exposure-like. Mm-hmm. And it was on the Santa Fe Trail, this house. It was the oldest house in town. That's kind of cool. It was built in 1875 by one of the founders of the town. Hey, that's cool. Fairchild. You know, so it was like, oh, Fairchild Garden House, you know. So all these visions started kind of bubbling up from the past. And sure enough, it took me to meet Elwin, you know, because I had to get a fence. I was walking my dogs like this every day. And that is such a recipe for swearing. I can't, you know. Oh. And when you have to let your dogs out 4 or 5 or 6 times a day or whatever, and there you are all like this, one little one. So she goes under his legs, and then instead of coming back out, she wraps around him, and then like this, and, you know. And then there's dogs all over the neighborhood barking. It's like, oh, so I had to get a fence built. So, I got some estimates. I thought they were too much. Oh, that's a lot of money. So I asked some workers that were working on my house at the time if they knew any local people that could build a fence. And they said, yeah, Elwin Moore, he's the only one I can think of. He's a character. He's quite a character. But you could give him a call. And I thought, okay. So I called him, and sure enough, he was a character. I was wanting to talk fence. We're walking the perimeter of the house. I'm like, this is the kind of fence I want. And he's like, you know, just talking about all the neighbors and the neighbors' names and all the history. And I thought, well, just give up, Cheryl. Just give in and relax and just go with it. Hear the story and then talk fence later. So sometimes that's the way it is, too. You think you got this plan, and you don't even think about it. Just hush up until, you know, until it kind of becomes clear. But the second force that I talked about, you know, the second force, the resistance, what happened with the house is that the loan didn't go through. After weeks and weeks and weeks, the loan didn't go through because they said it's kind of a dying town and the house needs way too much work and you're retired and, you know, you have two houses, you haven't sold your house yet, so you're rejected. And I thought, That never occurred to me because I have the highest credit rating, and all these years I've owned houses, I've never missed a payment. So something's wrong with this deal. And oh man, it was like this turn. But I thought, you will not take my good from me. I'll find a way. So I found a way, and it worked out. It worked out just fine. And but you know, be prepared for that resistance to happen, because it will. And then once like I said, you get another chance to recommit and, you know, take up your journey again. Now the journey of going to Overbrook took me to the journey, as I said, of a committed relationship again after 13 years of not knowing how to do it, and a past of watching my parents have the most miserable relationship on the planet, fighting, bickering, you know, awful stuff, feeling, you know, they were stuck. Why didn't you get a divorce? My sister and I, from a young age, would analyze it, you know, like, should they get a divorce? Who's right? Who's wrong? What are you, you know? And so we became great analyzers of relationships, but boy, howdy, don't get in one, Cheryl, because this is serious bad stuff. So, but I think that's what the attraction is. I think God, or whoever, planned attraction so that you do it anyway, even though even though you know you shouldn't. Don't go there. It's going to ruin your life. You're going to end up like your parents. You go there. And then after that, you know, kind of settles down, and then all of a sudden, you know, the fears and the worries and the second force comes up again. And for me, it happened a Valentine's weekend. Once again, I thought everything's going fine. All of a sudden, I'm sick as a dog, sick, 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 103.8 temperature. I went to the ER and it was sick for months. Nobody knew if it was mono or if, you know, second time mono or awful viruses. I don't know what it was. It turns out I think it was just sick trying to figure out this relationship thing. And I was constantly asking my friends, well, is this the right thing for me? Is this the wrong thing? You know, my stock is, you know. And once again, the advice didn't help me as much as it just, I had this feeling that I was supposed to be there. For whatever reason, I was supposed to be in this relationship. So just, you know, just be there and just do it, even though it was difficult. And in one of our arguments, I started a lot of arguments because I don't like to use this much paper towel to, for one, it's always the little tiny things, isn't it? So anyway, we had a lot of that to work through, big differences between, you know, between us. So anyway, during one of the arguments, he said, we need a life coach. I thought, I just made me laugh. I mean, one thing that we can do is laugh, and we can get out of, you know, get out of the, and we can both say, I'm sorry. It's easy for both of us to say, I'm sorry. So, you know, we get this idea that everything's going to be easy. It's going to be straightforward. It's going to be clear. You know, when we really get our guidance, it's going to be all those things. Sometimes it'll be clear. Sometimes it'll be foggy. Sometimes it'll be painful. Sometimes it'll be spectacular. But the bottom line is you're going where you're supposed to be going. You're learning what you're supposed to be learning. I'm learning about relationships. I'm learning about how to not be like my mother in a relationship. I'm learning how to open up and love and trust and, you know, do all that stuff. And I was hoping that my talk was going to be later in October, because I thought, well, maybe, you know, if I wait a few more weeks, I'll know more about a relationship. I was hopeful that maybe I'd know suddenly, but you know, it didn't happen that way. Then I found out I'm the first one in October. I thought, oh, great. I haven't figured it out yet. But I'm on the path, and Elwin's there thinking, what is she talking about? He hates it when I tell personal stuff, but I'm a personal stuff kind of gal. So anyway, the final thing that I wanted to talk about is, you know, when you follow your journey, there is going to be a payoff. There is going to be a reward. And there will be rewards along the way, thankfully. The problem is we don't get the rewards according to our schedule. The rewards come when they're coming, you know, when they're supposed to be coming. And but just know that the rewards are coming. They're there. They're on the way. They're some of them in your lap, some of them yet to come. But know that the rewards are going to be better and greater than you ever really could imagine. I didn't know when I was you know, taking that trip with Vi, that any of this was going to happen. I was just happy watching reruns. I had no idea I was going to be doing that stuff. No idea. And, you know, when I was sitting in the ER with, you know, thermometer in my mouth, I had no idea how that whole thing was going to turn out. I just knew that right then it stunk. It was bad. It was hard. And another thing I forgot to mention is when I went to the no restaurants open on Sunday after church, and so I was working in the heat, 100 degrees, living out of a cooler because, you know, I didn't move in yet. And there was, I went, walked downtown, no restaurant open, and another opportunity for blinkety blank. Boy, I was like starving, there's no food, there's, you know, when are these places open and closed? I could never figure it out. So I went to the BP to get a hot dog, a wellness person eating a hot dog, looking at redneck bumper stickers that were just outrageous. I mean, where else would you see redneck bumper stickers, but, you know, there. So that was the only time I really questioned, have I moved, you know, have I made a big mistake? Am I moving to a community that's going to be small-minded, conservative? I'm not going to like it. But, you know, as soon as I ate my hot dog, rested up a bit, came back to the house to work, I was fine, and I knew that I was supposed to be there. And it turned out it's a beautiful community. I love these people. It's just like Northern Exposure. And I'm cooking for the crews. I'm cooking for the people that are working on my house, so it feels much like that. I'll have all these people working while I'm, you know, working. It's a beautiful thing. So know that your rewards are going to be fantastic. You can't imagine what they're going to be. The bounty is going to be great. My gardens have been producing 42 quarts of tomatoes I canned, and peaches and green beans, and froze a bunch of stuff, and freezers full of grass-fed, you know, meat. So it's like, wow. Little House on the Prairie and Northern Exposure and, you know, Yeehaw and all kinds of stuff. So our journeys can bring us to our greatest strengths and to our greatest weaknesses. And that's a beautiful thing, because who wouldn't want to work on their weaknesses in a way that's God-driven, God-sent, and God-supported? So as you go through the week and you sit in your power chair in your power room, listening to your inner guidance, know that your inner guidance is going to heal, is going to lead you directly to healing, growing, and blooming in ways that you could not have ever imagined.